This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams, and you're listening to
the Humanist Network
Humanist
News.
Network
Humanist
News.
Network News.
Humanist Network News.
I ain't afraid of your Yahweh. I ain't afraid of your Allah. I ain't afraid of your Jesus. I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God.
It's September 26th. You're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the Institute for Humanist Studies. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
For those of you joining us for the first time, humanism is a non-religious philosophy based on reason and compassion. What do we have on our show today, Jess?
Today, we have U.S. Representative Pete Stark, and he is the highest elected official in the United States to openly acknowledge that he does not believe in a supreme being. We also have an atheist volunteer who's working to make the world a better place. And we also hear from some humanist university students in Edinburgh, Scotland, about their new campus group.
Nice pronunciation on Edinburgh. A lot of Americans mispronounce it Edinburgh, so good job. So Jess, tell us a little bit more about Representative Pete Stark.
Sure. Representative Pete Stark, he's a Democrat from California, and he's been a member of Congress since 1973. Last March, Congressman Stark acknowledged his non-theism in response to a questionnaire, which was done by the Secular Coalition for America.
And of course, the Institute for Humanist Studies is a founding member of the SCA.
Indeed, we are. Mm-hmm. And Representative Stark is a senior member of the House Ways and Means Committee, and he's also chair of the Health Subcommittee.
Now, for a little background, the United States Constitution prohibits religious tests for public office, but the Secular Coalition's research has revealed that Congressman Stark is the first open non-theist in the history of Congress,
which I think is a pretty good accomplishment, because recent polls show that Americans without a God belief are the most distrusted group in America.
I don't trust you.
I don't trust you either. Also, surveys show that the majority of Americans would not vote for an atheist for president, even if he or she were the most qualified for office.
Mm. Well, I caught up with Congressman Pete Stark just before his talk at Harvard University last Thursday night. I had a long day driving there and back from Albany. The talk was sponsored by the Humanist Chaplaincy at Harvard, and Stark was there as Harvard Humanist of the Year Lincoln Lecturer. So here's my interview before his talk. Congressman Stark, you recently openly admitted in the press that you do not have a God belief. And I'm curious, have you embraced the term humanist?
No, I don't know as I've ever embraced any particular term. Somebody asked me what my beliefs were, and I said I identify as a Unitarian who doesn't happen to believe in a supreme being, and that's about it, as far as I've gone with it.
What are your thoughts on politicians wearing their religion on their sleeves?
Well, I don't mind if they wear it on their sleeves, just so they don't introduce it into legislation.
Do you think that separation of church and state is a very important issue in Congress today?
Not only in Congress, but it's getting to be a bigger issue in the world. The United States has relatively little affiliation between the religious and the secular life when you compare the rest of the world. And so while I think it's important here, it's going to be more important globally.
Do you think it's important for more politicians to be open about their religious beliefs if, say, they are atheists or non-religious?
I don't think politicians have any duty to do anything except deal with the political issues and their beliefs and tell their people are asked to vote what they believe relative to secular issues.
Just one follow-up to that. Ronald Reagan Jr. once said that because he's an atheist, the highest office he could hold, public office, would be dog catcher. What do you have to say to that?
Well, he ought to try Congress or the school board in Berkeley. The two of us have made it that way. So, no, I don't think that's correct. Some parts of the country, maybe in Kansas, that would hold, but certainly not in Boston and certainly not in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Representative Pete Stark, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you.
And even if there is no God on my door,
Duncan, I need to point out that you made a little blunder in that interview there with Pete Stark.
Yeah, I think it's only fair to confess. I don't know if you noticed, listeners, but when I first was talking to Pete Stark, I referred to him as coming out, and I said he admitted that he was a non-theist. And what I should have said was acknowledged. This is something that I've been working with the media about. A lot of times journalists will refer to atheists as admitted atheists. I don't think it's necessarily malicious, but you know, when you admit something, it's usually something bad, you know, like a crime or something. And it has a little bit of editorializing. So for Pete Stark and for listeners, I apologize, but it does go to show you, you know, how hard it is sometimes when you're speaking. To my defense, not really. The Boston Globe was there reporting on the event. And as you're going to hear in the next segment, Congressman Pete Stark was, you know, pretty clear that he doesn't like to be referred to as a non-believer. And I noticed the Globe article referred to him repeatedly as a non-believer. So not to my defense, but yeah, there you go. They did it too.
Why don't we hear that excerpt from the talk that you recorded, Duncan?
Okay, these are some excerpts of what Congressman Stark told the audience. This is going to be introduced by Greg Epstein, the humanist chaplain at Harvard.
Let's give a big hand for Congressman Pete Stark.
Thank you. I'm going to have a lot of explaining to do. My 12-year-old son, who is not sure that he's comfortable without knowing what happens in an afterlife, has been asking me what a humanist is, and now I'm going to have to explain it to him. And I'm not sure that that will be so easy, but I am pleased that I'm in Cambridge and not in Salem. I feel somewhat more comfortable. People have talked about, in some things that I've seen, my being a non-believer. And that's perhaps not the case. I do believe, and I hope all of you do. It's a question of what you believe in.
This is what the congressman had to say about the rise of the religious right in the United States.
A guy named Bob Kimball, who was the president at Star King and an interesting theologian and a dear friend, and I asked him subsequently, as there was an increase in the right-wing Christian evangelical movement, and I said, what are they after? And this was in the late 70s, and he said, really? He said, they're probably the only group of Christians in this country who do all week what they say they're going to do on Sunday. But he said all they're looking for is a stable community in which to practice, to live. They didn't want people to be against homeschooling. They just wanted... But that changed with the 80s because suddenly there were people who see they could make some money promoting this on the radio. There were people who could build huge congregations. There were people who could use it to get political power. And so all of a sudden, the 80s took this movement, as I observed it, and made it, turned it into some real political activism. Now, unhappily, I'd say that the conservative Republicans are driven largely by a concern for a small group, maybe 20% of the Republican Party loyalists. And there's a concern, and you're seeing it if you follow with any interest the Republican candidates. Everybody's fussing over whether Thompson or Romney or who's going to serve this quote religious right. All of the Democratic candidates kind of pander to it. They all say, "Yeah, I believe," you know, "I believe," but they're all about the same. They don't say a lot about what they believe. They just believe in, they're religious. And I'm not sure they're getting questioned, and I'm not sure they're trying to decide whether Hillary or John Edwards is more religious than the other. The Republicans have that problem because they're going to raise some money from them, and it's of more concern.
And here's what he has to say about our current president.
In the current administration, well, my chairman, Charlie Rangel from Harlem, who was a
raised in Harlem, but raised as a Catholic. And I said, Charlie, what's early on? I said, what is this president doing, referring to President Bush? And he said, well, you know, if you could beat alcoholism by yourself, without going to the meetings, without seeking professional help, so that's one hell of a big job. And I suspect it is. And I suspect that, as Charlie would say to me, if Bush could control his alcoholism, he might feel he was born again. And give it, spot him that. That's fair game. And then, if the Supreme Court made you president, you might think you got a message from God. But the real worry is if you start talking to him every day, you may need some other professional help.
Echoing what Congressman Pete Stark told me earlier in my private interview, he emphasized to the crowd that he is very concerned about the separation of religion and government, especially on a global scale. Here's what he had to say.
I'm concerned now not as much about the push between secularism and religiosity in our country as I am in the world. The treatment of women is a matter of religious and areas of which I wouldn't tolerate. I'm not sure it's my role to tolerate, but I'm sure it's not my role to allow our laws to accommodate their religious ideas. But as you're going to find, as we all find, that three-quarters of the people on this globe aren't Christians. And they have some very long-running traditions that are religious in nature. And I see that as something that we're going to have to learn to deal with. We're sure not learning to deal with it in Iraq. But I do think that this world, which is becoming ever smaller, presents a challenge to us to accommodate the lifestyle that has been built on very strict religious tradition.
So, Duncan, in your interview with Congressman Stark, he seemed a little reserved, almost shy.
Yeah.
Did you get that sense?
I did. I think he's a little reticent about focusing his life's career on the fact that he doesn't believe in a supreme being, because he's worked on a lot of other very valuable initiatives. He's very concerned with poverty, erasing poverty. He talked about his career as a banker. And even as a banker, he ran a very progressive bank. They employed minorities. They went out of their way to help minorities have the opportunity to get advancement in their career. Sometimes that involved helping carpool and bus them to other branches in the suburbs where they couldn't get to. So he's very concerned with separation of church and state, but I don't think he wants to be the spokesperson for atheists and humanists. He's not anti-religious, and he's not anti-atheist. I think he is actually truly secular in his approach. So yeah, I did. He was short with his sound bites with me, but certainly comfortable talking and you know, happy and willing to talk.
But at one point, you tried to interview him, right? And he wasn't willing to do a personal interview with you.
Well, in a way, yes. I had mentioned on an earlier show when the Secular Coalition for America first announced in their press release that Congressman Stark was the highest elected non-theist to openly acknowledge that. I had called his press office. This was very early on. And I spoke with his press agent, and they weren't antagonistic or unfriendly, but I definitely got the vibe that, well, I'll pass along your message, but I don't think you're going to get this interview. However, after the story broke in the media, it was very well received. I didn't see any very much Stark bashing or non-theist bashing. The reaction was incredibly positive, so that might have fueled his willingness to be interviewed about this topic later on. I believe this is his first public talk, sort of focusing on this topic, and of course, it's at Harvard.
And was the crowd Was he well received there at the talk as well at Harvard?
Yeah, he was well received by the crowd. I'll also tell you, he shared an anecdote about after the story broke, he got about 2,000 emails. But he said of those 2,000 emails, there were only 50 that weren't, you know, enthusiastically supportive. And of those 50, from religious people, they were saying things like, "Are you sure you're happy?" And he said that, you know, in all his years as a congressman, he's never been so kindly criticized. Like, if that's the opposition, he said they were pretty kind to him.
Pretty concerned for his well-being, it seems.
Yeah. And, you know, I would have to say there was a Q&A session afterwards, and a number of the people asking questions wanted to, you know, focus on atheists as a distrusted minority and the discrimination against atheists. And the congressman was, you know, pretty emphatic in saying that atheists are not demonized in Congress. He said that even his religious colleagues in Congress, they know that they can't push legislation based on religious grounds. That's not, you can't do that in the United States. So they, even the religious Congress members, they find some secular reason for their bill. So the example Congressman Stark gave was, there may be someone who believes that abortion is a sin, but they don't justify their legislation to outlaw abortion by saying it's a sin. They say abortion is murder. So they try to create a secular grounds for the legislation. He encouraged a lot of the audience members to run for office. And, you know, if you want to change the system, run for office. He said, like he said to me, I mean, maybe in Kansas, you're going to have a harder time getting elected, but maybe move to Massachusetts or California if you want to run. I don't know about that. One thing I did want to point out was, in the bill promoting this talk, Greg Epstein, who organized this event, did a great job, mentioned that Congressman Stark was an atheist or a non-theist who served in the military. We've talked a lot about the no atheist in foxholes, canard. And it was a great moment. As Greg was mentioning this, the congressman's face turned bright red and he shook his head no. And then he said, you know, there were no foxholes in the Air Force where he served. But Stark was very humble and he said, you know, the Stark family's had a long line of cowardice, and Congress is also known for its cowardice. So, you know, he's trying to downplay that. I'm not some military hero. He even mentioned that he enrolled in MIT to avoid the Korean War draft. So he very modest about that. Not a champion for atheists and foxholes, personally. Mm-hmm. I mean, using himself as the model. But I actually spoke to some people in the crowd. So why don't we hear from, this is Woody Kaplan, and he's the chair of the Secular Coalition for America Advisory Board, which includes notables like Julia Sweeney and Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris. Here's Woody.
Woody, what is your position with the SCA?
I chair the advisory board.
During Congressman Stark's talk, you mentioned that you participated in the survey of Congress members asking them about their religious background, and you said a figure about the number of members of Congress who told you they were non-theistic. What was that figure?
Well, I interviewed something fewer than 60 members, a select list that we edited down for obviousness, and it turned out that of those less than 60 members, 21 of them said they were non-theists. And not one of them was willing to come public with that, come out as it were.
And did you talk with them about it? Did you try to encourage them to do so?
No, because I was trying to make it a comfortable conversation. Am I planning to go back and ask them again? Maybe after the next election is over.
What is your reaction to Congressman Stark's reaction when you shared that statistic with him?
It was interesting. I thought he evidenced a great deal of surprise, yet he did something that I've seen him do before, which is to minimize his bravery in doing it. And it was amazing in contrast to the fact that everybody else was afraid to do it.
Was this the first time you got to meet Congressman Stark in person?
I have met him in person before on a lobby visit on a civil liberties issue, but I haven't had the pleasure of spending any time with him.
And what did you feel watching him speak today at Harvard, sponsored by the Humanist Chaplaincy? How did you feel during the talk?
I thought that his humanity came across in a way that the crowd loved it. And I think he's a terrific example of an ethical, decent human being that can be that without religion.
Thanks, Woody.
Duncan, you were on Harvard's campus. Did you actually get to talk to some students?
Well, I managed to grab one student who had listened to the talk sort of in the mad rush. You know, everyone was leaving at the end, so here she is.
I'm Amanda Phillips, and I'm a third-year law student at Harvard Law School, and we just recently founded the Harvard Law School Heathen Society at www.hlsheathens.org. We just founded the group. We just were approved by the Harvard Law School student government this year, and so we have signed up quite a few new members. We're starting, you know, from the building a new organization from the ground up, but there are a lot of very interested law students who are excited to see the Heathen Society on campus.
Amanda, what is your reaction to this event tonight with Congressman Pete Stark?
I'm thrilled that we actually have a non-theist, an atheist congressman. I'm amazed that it happened at all. And, of course, it only could happen in California. So, you know, I was really, I liked that Representative Stark or Congressman Stark differentiated his politics from his religious beliefs. And when people in the audience asked him about it repeatedly, he said, well, religion just isn't that much of an issue. We debate the issues. And, you know, he even gets attacked by religious people from his own party at times. And so I liked that he seemed to make it clear that, you know, being an atheist doesn't necessarily translate into your political beliefs. And I like that he takes the political beliefs issue by issue. But as you might have been able to tell by my question at the end, I'm sometimes curious why, if we are free thinkers and we are supposed to be skeptics, why very often we all end up on the left, and I don't end up on the left on every issue. So I just don't know why that is. I would have expected more diversity of thought from free thinkers. And so this is something that I've been wondering about for a long time, about the atheist and the free thought community. And I don't know what the answer is, so I'm still gathering evidence and formulating my theories, and then I suppose I'll have to attempt to falsify them. So,
at least one student in the crowd, I don't think he was particularly thrilled with the talk and the tone of the talk, did not get a chance to interview him, but my impression was that he felt that Congressman Stark was being a little too optimistic and glossing over the real threats to atheists in this country. You know, he asked a question of the congressman about that, and I think he was a little disillusioned by the optimism.
And what's your take?
My take is that Congressman Stark was being very optimistic, and you know, maybe the reality is somewhere halfway between where Congressman Stark was and the audience.
And there's actually another non-theist politician in the news. This one doesn't believe in a supreme being, but he does believe in suing one.
The American way.
That's right. Nebraska State Senator Ernie Chambers is suing God. That's right, folks, suing God. Senator Chambers was the runner-up for the highest elected official in the U.S. who is openly non-theistic.
Correct. He is the second highest elected official in the U.S. who does not believe in a supreme being. But I should point out that, of course, former governor of Minnesota, Jesse the Body Ventura, was a pretty outspoken atheist.
That's right. Let's not forget him.
Mm-hmm.
What
was his tagline?
Yeah.
He was everyone you should know. He was a professional wrestler. Wasn't it snap into a Slim Jim? Was that guy?
I think that was a Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh, you don't want to mess with Jesse Ventura, though. You know, he was a tough wrestler, but he drew blood from the Predator, you know. Didn't kill the Predator, but... you know, that green antifreeze-like
plasma,
blood.
Plasma, yep.
Yeah,
yep.
That was him.
You know who I'd like to see Jesse the Body Ventura go up against?
Who's that?
Chuck Norris. That's like, that's perfect.
Yeah. Chuck Norris, who has listed the Institute for Humanist Studies as number one on his hit list.
That's right.
We should contact the body to
protect us. I think the body would have our back, yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, Senator Chamer holds the record for the longest tenure in the Nebraska legislature.
Mm-hmm. In his lawsuit against God, Chambers says, quote, the defendant directly and proximately has caused inter alia fearsome floods, egregious earthquakes, horrendous hurricanes, terrifying tornadoes, pestilent plagues, which is quite a lot of alliteration there. Good literary device.
The suit also asks for a permanent injunction ordering the defendant to cease certain harmful activities in the making of terrorist threats.
Ah, that's right. Now, this is clearly a publicity stunt, which Chambers acknowledges, but he says he's doing this to make a stand against frivolous lawsuits, and I think this one is pretty frivolous.
I would say so. And you know, after having spoke with the deity himself.
That's right, on a previous podcast.
That's right. I have to say, Mr. Deity might be a little nervous about this. He tends to get kind of flustered around paperwork and, you know, politics and court cases and things of that nature.
Yeah,
so
he was very worried.
We could see this come to something, Duncan. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a good a plug. A new season of Mr. Deity is going to be airing soon. Season 2, and I believe we have a promo of that show. So, Jess, do you want to play that for us?
Absolutely.
An all-new season of Mr. Deity is about to begin.
I gotta do 10 more episodes with this guy.
This is Wilson Karaman, the regional organizer on campuses in New York City and Brooklyn for the Secular Student Alliance, and you're listening to Humanist Network News.
I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
You can watch Mr. Deity at MrDeity.com. And you might also notice that a link to my interview with him last year mm-hmm. is prominently placed on his website.
Kudos to Jess.
Thank you.
The bumper you heard was Wilson Karaman from the Secular Student Alliance. Wilson and Allison Bates of the SSA traveled with me from our headquarters in Albany to Cambridge for that talk. Nice young man. And if you live in New York City, you should try to get in touch with him to talk about activism and student programs.
All right. The first guest on our show has come out as a non-theist.
And he did use that expression during his talk, come out.
Yes. And he's been working in the public forum in the politics to help make the world a better place. Now, our second guest is an atheist who is also volunteering to serve the public, but he is still in the closet. His name's Tom, and he asked us not to use his full name. Duncan, Matt, Jerry, and I talked with Tom last April about his Atheist Volunteers project.
I'm here with Tom. He's the coordinator of atheistvolunteers.org, also serving as an intern with the Humanist Chaplaincy at Harvard, and also an active member of the Rational Response Squad. So where do we begin? Tom, can you tell us about your project, Atheist Volunteers?
Definitely. Well, Atheist Volunteers was started mainly because of the misconception around atheists and being immoral. Mm-hmm. As somehow those two go hand in hand. And I personally felt that that's a grotesque misconception and that something had to be done to help combat that. So Atheist Volunteers, we even chose that name as a blunt juxtaposition between two very... two words that many people would not believe would be together.
I really like it. Hemant Mehta, who's recently promoting his book, I Sold My Soul on eBay, I remember he called me at the last minute for help kind of coming up with a brand name, and we came up with Friendly Atheist, so it was kind of the same thing. Like putting
exactly.
Together.
That's why I like his blog's name. It's just, you know, like, whoa, what's that exists?
Yeah. So what are some of the projects that, some of the volunteer projects that you're coordinating through your website, atheistvolunteers.org?
Well, our very first one is going to be the blood drive, Atheist Blood Drive, on May 3rd. We picked May 3rd because that's the National Day of Prayer in the United States. And while the rest of the country will be, or supposed to be, praying, we will try to do our part by donating blood. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be our first major project. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we, or I myself, try to make atheistvolunteers.org sort of like a one-stop shop for all things volunteer and atheist. Or I guess all things volunteer and no God, because mm-hmm. not everybody calls themselves an atheist who is on our website. Mm-hmm. So there, that was also a need that was not being met.
Right.
And I felt that something had to be done. And so Atheist Volunteers was born mm-hmm. with the help of the Rational Response Squad.
Tell me a little bit about the Rational Response Squad. We know them all through the very popular Blasphemy Challenge, where people were encouraged to post videos on YouTube, on the internet, denying, what, the Holy Spirit, which is supposed to be...
the one unforgivable sin.
Okay. And it's been really popular. It's been all over the news, international news. The Rational Response Squad also teamed up with the American Humanist Association to do a positive humanist values challenge mm-hmm. where humanists were encouraged to post positive videos about
right,
their
yeah.
positive humanist outlook. I understand, because I was speaking to Brian Sapient, who's one of the leaders of the mm-hmm. Rational Responders, that the humanist YouTube challenge has not been as popular as the Blasphemy challenge.
Yeah, I'll echo that. It's really not been a great success for, I think, pretty obvious reasons.
Well, what are the obvious reasons?
Well, it's very PC. The thing that made the Blasphemy challenge popular is that it was blasphemy. It was right. taboo. Mm-hmm. And the Humanist Values Challenge is... It erred on the side of being politically correct, and is where I think the fault really lies. If I were to redo the approach, I would focus more on the celebration of being human mm-hmm. and having that as the force behind making a video, instead of using a sort of a catchword like values that is mostly associated with political, political issues.
Yeah.
So I think some people saw it as a real PC thing and
yeah.
were just like, nah, don't feel like it.
It wasn't naughty enough, I think.
Yeah. You know, the Blasphemy Challenge was sexy. You know, that's yeah. what I think really, yeah. you know, made it get off and, yeah, hit off, make a big splash on the papers. It's just, yeah. it was, you know, people.
Now, are you at the Rational Responders, you know, headquarters, or, you know, I'm sure you're doing a lot of it by email.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, are you discussing how to, you know, sort of rope people in with the sexy blasphemy and that stuff, and then steer them towards volunteerism? Because I know, you know, with the teaming up with the AHA and the New York City Atheists to do this blood drive, I mean, seems like you're trying to rope people in with what's catchy and sexy and exciting, and then maybe try to, once you hook them, sort of steer them in a positive way. Is mm-hmm. it, have you been discussing that? Or?
That's I can share my own views. I won't be able to speak for the entire Rational Response Squad.
Yeah.
But in my own observations, that's been a mantra.
Yeah.
It's been to get excitement going, then you can talk about the stuff that maybe is a little more dry,
right?
Because you can use that momentum.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'd agree with that.
Last question, Tom. Mm-hmm. You are not fully out of the closet mm-hmm. as an atheist, and I wanted to ask you, you know, what you're going through right now. Why are you still kind of in the closet about your atheism?
Honestly, I do it not because I'm ashamed, because I care for those who care about me. Mm-hmm. And I want to be sure that those who care about me very much have a good amount of preparation mm-hmm. To clear up a lot of misconceptions before I potentially cause some very traumatic happenings.
Yeah.
I think it can really end up being traumatic. So, I'm having fun being a in the closet sort of work by day, have fun at night sort of guy, And doing it on the internet has been wonderful because I can hide in my little room and be mischievous behind the, on the keyboard. And then in my daily life, put on my suit and tie and just go out and do the regular thing and not have to worry about getting harassed.
What does your family think that you do? I mean, I assume that...
Oh, I told them... Well, they think... I told them about the humanist conference, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's a lot about, like, philosophy and science and a lot of, you know, great academic terms. I tried to stay away from... I was avoiding, because it's a place I'm afraid to go, and I don't think my I'm not sure what the reaction would be, so I want to do a little bit more preparation on my part before I am fully open about it. Mm-hmm. So,
Tom, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk with us.
Sure thing.
All right.
After our interview with Tom, Jess asked him if he would like to ask a question about coming out and how to do it to our advice columnist, Sweet Reason. Marlene Matsumara, the voice of Sweet Reason, will be visiting the Institute for Humanist Studies next month, and we hope to record her answers to many of your questions for future episodes. Sweet Reason will be answering Tom next month, but if any of our listeners out there would like to call in and leave some advice for Tom, you can call our brand new toll-free listener comment line. What's that number, Jess?
That's 1-877-659-1515.
And why did we get that toll-free number, Jess?
Because lots of folks have been calling us and asking us to get a toll-free number so they don't have to pay to call us from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada.
Ask and you shall receive. So here's Tom's question for Sweet Reason.
What would be the best way to... give somebody a different feeling about atheists or humanists? How do you sort of come in acknowledging that there's probably a very strong reaction that will occur at the dropping of that word? And so how can you numb that down a little bit, dumb it down a little bit?
Well, that's Tom's question, and you'll get Sweet Reason's answer in the next podcast. And you can also leave him some advice, or if you just have any questions or any comments for us, please feel free to call our toll-free listener comment line at 1-877-659-1515.
We're going to be hearing from Scotland next. As our listeners may know, the Secular Student Alliance is now housed at the Institute for Humanist Studies. The SSA is an international student organization providing support to humanist, atheists, and other free-thinking students. There are nearly 100 affiliate groups of the SSA around the world. One of the most recent groups to affiliate is a new organization at the very prestigious University of Edinburgh.
Wait a minute. Prestigious? Didn't they let you in?
I was at one point in time a student at the University of Edinburgh. I did a term abroad there. And I realized something when I was there. I didn't start classes until October. And suddenly that Rod Stewart song, Maggie May, it made sense to me because there's that line, it's late September and I ought to be getting back. I was thinking, you better hustle, man. You're late.
You're late.
We start school and, you know, some people start in August in the U.S. So, but they have a later schedule. Anyway, Brendan Diefenbach was an intern working for the Secular Student Alliance this summer at the Institute's office in Albany. And Brendan called by phone to interview the students at the Edinburgh University Humanist Society. Brendan actually spoke to three members of this group, but we only have time to play two. The first speaker will be President Roger Redondo of the Edinburgh University Humanist Society. I should note that Edinburgh is a very international university with people coming from all over the world. And of course, Roger is Spanish.
What sort of events or services are you hoping to provide for the community?
For our university group, what we want to run is everything our members are willing to support and participate in. So we have from humanist blood drives, which is something that we have adapted from the American version of atheist blood drives, to a virtual library where people can share books among themselves.
I saw on your website that you just finished conducting your first blood drive, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. We had it yesterday. It's in the middle of the summer. It's one of the low points in the year for blood donations, so the hospital was very happy to see some fresh students joining the blood donation group.
If another group, say one of our affiliates, were to try to conduct something along those lines, which it is going to be on our action plan that we're going to be releasing to our affiliate groups this coming semester, one of the possible campaigns that we suggest is a blood drive. What did you learn from that experience that might be helpful to them should they decide to run a similar event?
So for the blood drives, again, the tactic here is always to get people that are active coming to meetings and talking to them in person. This is very easy to do in a campus in the U.S. It's a little bit harder in European universities where the campus is spread around the city. But still, one thing that we try to avoid is forum talks where people can write up and engage into endless conversations while nothing happens. We are more of an activist group where we want people to come along and get involved. So that's my suggestion. Get them to come by to your meetings and see who wants to do things.
I also saw on your website that you're going to be running an event this September that you're calling the Freshers Free Thought Fair.
September is a big month for student groups. It's the beginning of the year. There is lots of freshmen starting the university. So every student group tries to have the best or biggest event, trying to recruit new people, and also an event that identifies that group as what they are. We thought of running a free thought fair in which we could have multiple activities going on all the time, and different students could just go and participate in the ones that they felt were more interesting to them. We have a telepathy test that we want to run with the parapsychology unit here in the university. We're going to run a serious telepathy test as skeptics and free thinkers. We're open-minded, but we put all these theories to test. So we will have two big rooms and have pairs of people, one of them looking at a drawing, the other one trying to connect to the other person and draw what the other person is looking at and see what happens. We'll have to refine how this experiment is done, and we will count with the support of some people here at the university. And we have activities from these funny telepathy tests to some visual illusions that show people that maybe what they see through their eyes is not what's real, and some more constructive activities. We want to run morality surveys and invite people to run some games and thought problems that show them how they compute and how they resolve moral problems.
Our next guest is Stuart Ritchie.
And I have to confess, Stuart is a Scotsman, and I couldn't resist. I love that accent. I had to talk to him, so I jumped on the line while Brendan was interviewing him.
Hello.
Hey there, Stuart. This is Brendan. How are you doing?
Hi there. Not too bad. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thanks.
Excellent.
So what's your role in the group?
Well, I've been appointed secretary of the Humanist Society, so tedious things like minute taking and stuff like that, but also kind of when things start moving, I'll be getting involved in organizing events and all the activist things that Roger and Tim have been telling you about.
Have you folks thought at all about maybe taking advantage of the draw of the very famous Edinburgh International Arts Festival there with your events?
Well, really, I wasn't aware that. I think Roger's been reading up on all these sort of things, and he kind of keeps us informed as president. So I'm not 100% sure, but I would definitely be back that kind of thing, because people seem to at the moment atheism and humanism seems to be linked to science all the way, and getting involved in arts things is I think essential as well.
Absolutely, building a culture of it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it seems to be, I mean, we know science isn't dry and boring and all that sort of stuff, but, an outsider may look and say, oh, it's all this stuff about biology and evolution, oh, I'm not particularly interested in all that. But, getting involved in cultural things. I mean, for instance, I play in a rock band Roger knew I was going to mention that. Mm-hmm. So yes, I played a Robin Hood, and we're going to maybe set up some gigs in, you know, in aid of the Humanist Society and things like that. I can't say many of our songs are full of humanist lyrics, to be honest, but you know, we could write a few, I'm sure. And yeah, so we're going to maybe have you know, more fun events like that to kind of maybe attract a different audience of people.
Absolutely, I think it helps make a movement stronger. You know, you look at successful movements, and you know they had an aspect not just of the political, but of the cultural as well.
That's, you know, exactly
look
right.
At,
yeah.
Heck, look at the Christian movements. You know, they don't just have their, you know, political aspect; they have a very strong social aspect. And we see people, you know, who are going. You know, they say they go to church for the community and things like that. You know,
exactly. So in fact, you kind of suspect that maybe a lot of people are involved just because of the community aspect rather than the actual religious aspect. But when, you know, we would be hoping people would be involved in both, in our not religious, you know what I mean, in the you know, the humanist aspect and also the social aspect. As Tim was talking about, you know, we're having specifically humanist events, and you know, but yeah, it's. The social aspect of it is very, very important, especially in religious things. Yeah, it was a shame that there wasn't such a thing before. You know, I believe there was a humanist society a way back in Edinburgh University in the 60s. Roger tells me, yeah. But you know, it's incredible that a university where, you know, David Hume and, you know, Charles Darwin studied, you know, doesn't have a humanist society until now. And I think we've had a good idea here, and I think. Hopefully, we can try and progress to the stage where, you know, we're recognised as much as, if not more than, the religious societies in the university.
So, I was wondering, as you are our first actual native Scotsman on the line, could you tell us a little bit what you think, what your sort of, you know, you feel that you're in your countryman's perspective is on the sort of fundamentalist climate in the States here?
Well, it couldn't really be more different than it is in Scotland, to be honest. In Scotland, we have it's not quite as you know, middle-of-the-road religion as the Church of England, but the Church of Scotland is very much, you know, kid-gloves approach to things. It's very, very, you know, you don't see, if we saw people standing preaching in the street or anything like that, it would be out of the ordinary completely, you know. I mean, you're hard-pressed to find really, really, really fundamentalist people unless you go into people such as, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses and all those kind of people who just don't believe in any evolution or anything like that, you know. So fundamentalist Christians, as you might see in America, are pretty alien to what we have in Scotland. England as well, you know, as I was saying, the Church of England, it's not even clear whether a lot of the bishops in the Church of England actually believe in God, you know. So, you know, and you have suspicions about Scottish people as well. As I was saying about the social aspect of it, you know, you find a lot of people just go to church because of a nice coffee morning or because of the nice, we're talking about bands as well. They have these Christian rock bands. We must played a gig with a Christian rock band by accident. We didn't realize. And they came on, all their songs about, do you know his name? And all this sort of stuff. And that was, you know, horrendous, absolutely horrendous. But, you know, that attracts quite a lot of people to the cause, I guess. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who is a real foaming-at-the-mouth Bible belter, you know, like you would find in America. I think my phrase, foaming-at-the-mouth Bible belter, has caused some... No, anyway, but yeah, I think very, very far away from what you find in Scotland.
Do you think it's easier to sort of accomplish your ends by the fact that you just don't have that same resistance that we do here? That, do you find it easier, people are more accepting than they are, say, like over here?
Yeah, I think they would be. I don't think you would get particularly vehement sort of, you know, you know the kind of arguments you get against atheism, like, you know, you're not responsible to anyone, you know, if you're not responsible to God, then, you know, you can do what you like and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, you particularly hear that because so many people here are, not if not atheist, you know, a lot of people maybe don't say explicitly, I am an atheist, but they just don't, they're no interest in the church or religion or, you know, anything like that. So I think providing an alternative to these people, to, you know, religion, providing an alternative such as humanism, say, look, there is a set of, you know, a life stance, I think they call it, out there that, you know, has ethics you might agree with, you know, metaphysical statements you might agree with, philosophical statements you're going to agree with, you know, and I think a lot of people, you don't find a huge amount of resistance to that, except in the real, you know, wackos, and there's a few of them in the Church of Scotland, you know, that that
there's one in every pack, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the main debate in the Church of Scotland is whether they should allow, you know, gay ministers and all this sort of stuff. I mean, ridiculous things like that. but nothing about, you know, whether they believe in evolution and all this sort of stuff. I mean, that's saved for Jehovah's Witnesses and stuff like that. So, as I say, the main Church of Scotland and the Episcopalians and all that sort of thing in Scotland are really, you don't get a lot of, you know, opposition from them.
Stu, I have one final question for you. I have heard that there are a number of female members of your group.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard from any today, but a lot of the humanist groups in America tend to be mostly male. So is it true that you indeed actually have female members of your group, and what's the makeup? And you
know? We do. We have a few humanists, female humanists. We have one PhD psycholinguistics student, and a PhD climatologist as well. And is that? There's two more, but I haven't met them apparently. So, but yeah, so it's much more. It's not quite 50-50. You're right. It is more male oriented. But there's you know, I don't really know why that should be particularly. It would be interesting to know what the makeup of the religious societies is, whether they're more male, you know, more male oriented or you know, I know that I don't want to be in, you know, try to be a mirror image of religious societies all the time sort of thing, but you know, I would be interested in seeing what you know, what the makeup of them was.
Well, Stu, I've talked to a few women involved in the free thought movement about mm-hmm. the ratio between men and women in the groups, and it's normally many more men than women. So mm-hmm. the women have the saying, "The odds are good, but the goods are odd."
Nice. I like that. I like that.
This is Evan Gran from the Fritanke magazine in Norway, and you're listening to the Humanist Network News.
The segment we were just listening to was an interview by Brendan Diefenbach, intern for the Secular Student Alliance, speaking with Roger Redondo and Stuart Ritchie, members of the Edinburgh University Humanist Society. If you'd like to learn more about that group, visit humanist.eusa.ed.ac.uk. Those Scottish URLs are pretty tricky. Evan, I have the dubious honor of sitting in on this session, being observed by a journalist, and I think Jess and I have been trying to do our best for you. You're going to be traveling with me down to the Atheist Alliance International tomorrow in Washington. And you plan to do some interviews down there for Fritanke magazine?
Yeah, I'll be present there, and I'll see what happens. And I'll try to do some interviews with the different people mm-hmm. that are speaking there. So, but I haven't planned any details in it yet. Yeah,
that's the best way. It's the only way to go.
Catch one of them like you're planning also.
Yeah, yeah. Now, tell us a little bit about your writing. Where does it appear? How can people read what you're writing?
Fritanke is the member magazine, actually, of the Norwegian Humanist Association.
Mm-hmm.
And formerly, it was issued six issues every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the association decided that they would erect a web newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So I was employed as a journalist for this web newspaper, and it's been in function now for just over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we publish approximately 1 to 2 articles every working day.
Mm.
And it's mainly me who write, and some other people fill in also.
Evan has been working on a piece today as we speak, mm. and I've seen some of your writing. You've included articles about the Humanist Network News podcast before. Mm-hmm. I was thrilled to see them. I couldn't read them, though, because they're in Norwegian. Do you translate any of your work into English? And what were you saying about me?
we've actually done that once. We translated one article to English mm-hmm. for the IHEU website.
The International Humanist and Ethical Union.
The International, yes, correct. So, but we haven't done any more of that. But we might. Mm-hmm. We can pick up and try to contact our translator again.
Well, I've been pressuring Evan today to translate some articles into English and then syndicate them in the Humanist Network News e-zine, which you can read at humanistnetworknews.org. I think that would be great to get some more European news coverage in there. I'd like to ask you about journalism media in Norway. Do issues concerning humanism make the mainstream press over there? Do the journalists for newspapers write about humanist issues?
Yes, well, actually, right now we have a big discussion on the separation of church and state in Norway. Mm-hmm. And so if this is a humanist issue, which I think it is, it is really on the agenda, because in Norway we have a state church, which of course is something that that the Norwegian Humanist Association doesn't like and have protested heavily against. And we also write a lot about this. So in that way, this is really something that the general media are interested in.
But let me ask you, do the leaders of the Norwegian Humanist Society, do they appear in news articles? Do reporters seek them out to interview them?
Well, sometimes they do, and especially when it comes to things concerning church and state, and when it comes to other kind of life stance, religious theme, when this theme is up, they are contacted and they are quite frequently out. Could have been more, but normally they are. It depends on what's on the agenda, but remember that the Norwegian Humanist Association is a really kind of large organization in 70, Norway, 70,000. So it's the second largest life stance organization in Norway after the state church.
Right. Well, Evan, thanks a lot for coming on to our show to talk with us. And I look forward to traveling with you to Washington, D.C.
So do I.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Evan.
Well, Jess, how do you feel about being observed by a journalist while you work?
I think we did okay. How about you?
It was relatively painless. So we'll see what he writes, and then we'll translate
it. That's the test.
And then we'll find out what he said. Well, that's it for our program this month.
We'd love to hear some feedback about our show, or if you have any questions for a sweet reason, please call our toll-free listener comment line at 1-877-659-1515.
You can also read editions of the Humanist Network News e-zine at humanistnetworknews.org.
Our theme music was generously donated by Holly Near. You can get more information at hollynear.com. And the other songs that you've heard throughout the show, you can get information about those, their website, their song name, their artist, at humaniststudies.org/podcast.
You can also read transcripts.
From previous shows, that's
from
right.
From previous shows. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
The Humanist Network News podcast is made possible by the Institute for Humanist Studies, a nonprofit think tank that promotes the philosophy of humanism.